G'day guys, I'm still in Texas, but I am on the countdown to go home. I'm about, I think about maybe 8 hours before getting on an airplane. And I am somewhere sort of, I was gonna say in the middle of Texas, apparently it's East Texas, in a place called Tyler. And as you can see, it's kind of, well, for those of you who can see and are not on the podcast, this is kind of a bit of an oldie, worldie hotel. So we came out here because we wanted to sort of go somewhere away from cities and things like that. We've been in Dallas for the last week. When was it? Since Friday. All the times get really, really weird when you're away. It's very hard to remember what you've done when. So anyway, wanted to get out of the city. Go to, in this case, there's a winery and a distillery, which was very good fun. And yeah, so here we are. I'm actually going to come back and talk a bunch about American cultural things later on at the end of this update, because after I touched on a few little things last week, a bunch of people popped up and they were like, oh wow, I never knew that. That was really interesting. What else is really different about America and the rest of the world? And while I've been here, just talking to people as well, obviously there's a lot of sort of, I guess, societal norms here, which are very, very different to other places, and people are unaware of it. So I'm gonna do a few infosec things and then spend the rest of the podcast, video, etc., talking about that. And then if you're not interested in cultural things, you can tune out then. So we'll start with the tech things. And I didn't mention this last week, but I did get the new Apple Watch. I got that just before I left Australia. In fact, I ordered the watch and the phones when everything launched. And then the watch was to be delivered sort of around about the time while I was away. And believe it or not, my last watch, which I think that must have been the Series 4 by then. I lose track. The one that came out last year. So that one managed to completely die like the day before I left home. And I mean, these things have been rock solid before. Most of the iThings are rock solid. Mind you, that's not an iThing. The Apple things are rock solid. And this one, like I put on the charger at 5 o'clock or something in the afternoon because I think I was going for a swim or something like that, came back later on and just never started again. But anyway, there's sort of two interesting sides of the story. So I sent it back, basically just wasn't going to boot or anything like that. Sent it back to Apple. Apparently they've actually sent me a whole new one. So good on Apple for that. It's just over a year old too. So it's outside of that like 1 year warranty period. That was sort of good of them to send me a brand new one, which I'll have to figure out what to do with when I get home. But what I did do is go down to the Apple shop as part of trying to get the other one fixed. And they were basically like, no, you've pressed both the buttons and held them for 10 seconds and you've tried to charge it. Like, it's beyond us. So I went to the Apple shop and managed to pick up the new one in the store on the day. Wasn't the original color I'd wanted. I'd wanted the silver one. And for those of you that can see this one, this is now the black one. Turns out I actually quite like the black one. I use this a heap when I travel. And this is sort of leading now to the point of, well, you know, what's good about it? Why update? So I use it a lot when I travel because I really want to see things like time zones. So we're 9:30 here in the morning in Texas. I've got no idea what it is at home, but I love having at my fingertips the fact that it's midnight back at home. I love having the fact I can see my flight here, and then it integrates with the Qantas app for things like boarding passes and all this sort of thing. So I do actually use the watch, I think just gradually more and more and more over time. When I first got it, I was like, it's not changing my world. And trust me, like, it doesn't change my world. But it is something which is really nice to have. In terms of the new one, obviously screen real estate. So apparently there's about 30% more screen real estate, which is pretty cool. Because there's all that extra screen real estate, you can fit a lot more complications onto it. So at the moment, I'm running the temperature 16C here in Texas at the moment. I don't know why I'm running the UV thing, because there isn't any at the moment. It's been pretty crap weather, to be honest. The exercise rings, and then of course foreign time zones and things like that. So I find it really, really good for that. It's got haptic feedback on the wheel as well. So when you're sort of scrolling the wheel, that now feels pretty nice. I guess just a lot more mechanical. Excuse me. So that's a pretty good side of it. And look, I mean, other than that, I know a lot of people are like, wow, this is so much better in so many ways. I have not finding it revolutionary, but it is a nice evolution as opposed to the phone that I'm talking on at the moment, which really didn't quite change that much. So I'm looking at the iPhone XS, and it's basically an iPhone X. So now, mind you, having said that, little incremental improvements on the camera and doing things like that dynamic bokeh effect where you can change the depth after you take photos. And I do take a heap of photos because children and beaches and beer and things like that. So excuse me, it is kind of good for all of that. All right, moving on. Let me go on to some data breach stuff. Loaded a data breach this week from a service called FacePunch. And FacePunch make games. They're a UK-based game maker. And, you know, there's a couple of interesting things that struck me with this. So number one, I'm looking at the Have I Been Pwned tweet here from a couple of days ago. 343,000 accounts on this one. It looks like a forum that was compromised in 2016. IP addresses, email addresses, obviously, dates of birth, and salted MD5 hashes. Now, I keep coming back to this date of birth thing. Like, stop freaking collecting date of birth, you people. Like, what do you need date of birth for in a gaming forum? And before people pop up and say, oh, because it's COPPA, Child Online Protection Act, which is the US legislation around children under the age of 13 and their various precautions and things like this you need to take. Plus, of course, there are other services in other parts of the world where you need to make sure, for example, someone is an adult. You can't go to a website about alcohol unless you're 18. In most of the world, except for most states in the US, we'll come back to the cultural thing. So there's that side of things. And people say, look, you know, you got to make sure that people are a certain age. And I'll say, well, why don't you just put a checkbox on the website at registration and say, I certify that I am 13 or older or 18 or older. And I've often had this response where people go, they could lie. And I was like, you're filling in a freaking date of birth thing anyway. Like, people are going to lie if they want to lie. And then they'll go, oh, no. And someone can tell me if this is correct or not. They'll say, COPPA actually requires you to ask the date of birth, not just say that I'm old enough. Well, okay, ask the date of birth. Are they old enough? Let them through. If not, then don't. You don't need to store this stuff. Because the problem is, when you look at this, we've now got 343,000 people who've had what is an identity verification question leaked publicly. And then there's a whole other discussion here about whether or not it should be an identity verification, but birth date is static KBA, knowledge-based authentication. So honestly, people, just stop collecting frickin' birth dates. Salted MD5 hashes as well in 2016. Like, we have known for the better part of a decade that this was a really bad idea. And I suspect that this was a combination of either the forum software just did this by default, or it works, we just haven't gone back to touch it at all. But, you know, this is then sort of one of these discussions around software is an investment that you have to keep paying over time. Like, you get, if you're going to get software, if you're going to stand up a service, you can't just stand it up and go, well, that's that done, job done, let's move on. You've actually got to look after the thing. So that, yeah, that it just frustrates me no end when we see sort of low-hanging vulnerabilities and the like. It's just, like, why are we doing this? This could have been, it wouldn't have stopped the breach, but it would have been good if the passwords weren't basically useless in terms of storage and knowledge-based authentication criteria wasn't there. So anyway, other than that, it's just another day on the internet. Incidentally, I did reach out to them. I did get a response, and they said that they knew about the breach and they had notified people at the time. I'm curious if anyone did get a notification from me, but not from them, that would be interesting. Although, having said that, 2 years ago, you could have forgotten about it. Regardless, it was just a very straightforward one to process, unlike the next one. Now, I don't want to give too much away about this next one because we're sort of still going through the process here. When I say we, there are multiple people involved trying to sort this mess out. But there is a... I'm trying to figure out how to say it without giving it away too early or overly sensationalizing it. But it is a site with data of the likes that you would really never want to see made public. And there's a seven-figure number of records, and we're going through the process of how do I freaking get in touch with the company and get them to respond. And then we're also going through the discussion of we want to make sure that they know about this so that if the vulnerability still exists, then it's fixed beforehand. But if it doesn't, or rather if the, if losing my mind at the moment, this is what happens when you take like 2 days off and you just don't think about stuff. So let me rephrase that. If the vulnerability still exists, obviously we want the organization to know about it and fix it in advance. Having said that, if it still exists and there are people potentially exploiting it, well then we've got to get attention somehow. So, you know, do you make a big story out of this early on with the hope that that will get their attention and things will actually happen a bit faster? So it's just one of these painful things that boils back down to this simple fundamental issue of how do I get in touch with the company and let them know they have a vulnerability? And they take it seriously and they actually receive the email and doesn't go to junk and they don't think I'm a scammer or I'm going to, you know, this is a shakedown or something like this. So anyway, that's not fun going through that process at the moment, but one way or another, next week I'll be able to talk about what that site was. Is another data breach thing, and this is one that pops up all the time, and I'm tempted to actually write a dedicated blog post about this, is I had multiple people throughout the week contact me and say, hey Troy, have you seen that Spotify had a big breach? And I know where this is going every single time, because until Spotify comes out and says we have had a big breach, they almost certainly have not had a big breach. They're a modern tech company. They'll own it, I'm sure, if this actually happens. And what inevitably happens every single time here is someone is pointing to a paste somewhere, so usually thousands of accounts, which sounds like a lot, but out of the scope of Spotify, it's not a lot. I imagine they have many tens, if not hundreds of millions of subscribers. And someone will say, and my real password was in there for Spotify. So basically, you've got a shit password, okay? Because what this is every single time it's credential stuffing. And what really, I shouldn't be frustrated at the people that are reporting this. I appreciate people popping up and sharing this. But the underlying issue here is a bunch of people have gone and reused their passwords in different places, which of course is the norm. And then someone has gone and got these lists and they've gone, let's go and test them all against Spotify. And frankly, there is a bit of a question for Spotify to answer here, which is why is it possible for people to do mass enumeration of your authentication mechanism? Anyway, and then they get together like 4,000 of them, put a paste out there and go, Spotify breach. And if it looks like a Spotify breach because people are going, oh, holy shit, this is actually legitimate creds for Spotify. And then someone then attempts to monetize the bigger breach, which of course just doesn't exist. So I guess the moral of the story here is that if you are looking at one of these pastes or something similar, especially for Spotify, and you're going, this looks like a breach, just think long and hard about, is this actually a password I've used somewhere else? And could it simply be that someone has tested it against this one? Either one you've used somewhere else or it's a crap password. Now, one other thing, little bit moving on from the Spotify thing about reusing passwords, or about the appearance of passwords and breaches. This week as well, I saw a massive uptick, massive, like I had dozens and dozens of people contacting me about those sort of sextortion scams that have been running around. So these are the ones where someone gets themselves a whole heap of email addresses and passwords, and then they spam the email addresses. And I just remembered the phrase they use. They spam the email addresses with a message saying they have caught you doing something. Now, the phrase that was used in the one this week is they have caught you looking at porn and, air quotes, experiencing fun. Now, I have seen these scams before where experiencing fun is phrased in a much more direct manner, and I think you can see where I'm going with this. So basically saying they've caught you enjoying a bit of private time with your video camera, and here is your password to prove that I've been able to get into your system. Now, this is entirely automated. It's not personal. If you don't do anything with it, nothing happens. But flip the tables for a moment and sort of put yourself in the position of the people receiving these emails. Like, it must totally freak them out because they're going, well, this is actually my password. So think about the confidence that's being gained here as part of the social engineering process. And then maybe they have experienced fun at some point in the past. And they're like, well, I remember that time when I experienced fun. And yes, I do have a webcam. And you see how all the dots start to join in a victim's mind. And it turns out that a bunch of people have been paying it. Someone shared a link to the Bitcoin wallet a little while back. And this was sort of just when we first sort of started to see this happen. And there were like a couple of Bitcoin in there already. So someone is making themselves a very good earn out of this for a very, very small investment. So that is particularly nasty. And, you know, like I said, I mean, what can you do? You can ignore it and move on. Because let's face it, just about all of us have been in a data breach at some time or another. So we could all be victim to these emails. I mean, yeah, there's just some real pricks out there. I don't know what else I can say. All right, moving on. So that was all the InfoSec stuff. I've been going for a quarter of an hour on that. I didn't blog anything this week. I've just been tied up with other things and of course, actually trying to have some downtime as well. But I did want to talk about some of these cultural differences. If you're not interested, tune out now. Otherwise, I'm going to spend, I don't know, another 10 minutes or something talking about things that are different here. And just to be fair, this is things that are different in both a positive and a negative way, depending on your perspective, of course. And for a little bit of context, I must have had about a dozen trips to the US in the last few years. And the places I tend to end up going, obviously go to Seattle a lot for Microsoft things, been to Vegas a couple of times, LA quite a bit. Other bits on the other side, obviously Washington DC for the Congress thing. I have been to Dallas before. I've been to Pennsylvania and just a bunch of sort of different places around the country. Oh, and Hawaii earlier this year too. So I think I've had a lot of exposure to different parts of the country. And you know, one of the interesting things about this trip is, in all honesty, it has been the best US trip I've ever had. And what I mean by that is that I just constantly had positive experiences over and over and over again. And I suspect part of it is having my wife with me. It does make travel a lot more enjoyable. Part of it also is I think here in Texas, people are just very, very amiable, very friendly and open, a lot more so than some other parts of the country. I had very, very positive experiences. Now, that did also give me an opportunity spending the last 8 days here and also driving around quite a bit around different parts of Texas to sort of reflect on some of these observations. And I started taking notes of them all on my iPad after people last week started going, oh, this is really interesting, tell us more. So yeah, on the driving front, last week I commented on how the indicators were red. And a bunch of people were like, what are indicators? Is that like the engine light on the dashboard or something? Turn signals, blinkers. So, you know, okay, perfect example there. We call them indicators in Australia. I'm pretty sure in the UK they are indicators as well. I did live in the UK for a year as well and do go back there a bit. So part of these experiences too, just for a little bit more context, is what's different with other parts of the world. So I grew up, well, I lived in Australia till I was about 14, and then I spent a couple of years living in the Netherlands, and then another 3 years living in Singapore, and traveling a lot around Europe and Asia then. Then later on, spent a year living in the UK with my wife, and then traveling a lot around Asia for work. So I guess had a few opportunities to see how things are different around parts of the world. So the indicators, turn signals, blinkers, they are orange pretty much everywhere else I can think of. I cannot think of another country where I've seen them red. And I still, you know, even driving around yesterday, like I find this weird because it's like you see a light and it's red. And yes, it's only on one side, but is the other side out? Oh, but it's blinking, so okay, it's a blink. And maybe it's just like taking me some, it's just mental friction for me because it's different. But making it red does seem like an odd choice. Like surely if you made it another color from like a UX perspective, you know, that would be clearer. So there's that. The other thing is on the indicators, blinkers, turn signals, you've got to have orange lenses, which is the thing that's actually kind of odd. And I remember from many, many discussions in car forums that I've blown many hours on, people in the US actually seeing it as a virtue to replace the orange lenses with clear ones. So for example, we were driving around a Corvette at the moment. I'll come back to that too in just a moment. And on the front guards, just in front of the wheels, the indicator lenses are quite sort of long and thin and they are orange all the way down. They'd be clear in any other part of the world that I can think of because it's a much more sort of consistent aesthetic with the rest of the car. Like this great big gaudy orange thing does look a little bit crap. If you go and do a Google for like US versus rest of the world indicator lenses or something like that, you'll see that even things like I tweeted one of a Mercedes C-Class where the indicator is integrated into the whole headlight. And this light inside this headlight section sticks out quite overtly as orange, whereas all the other ones it's clear and you just got this one great big clear light. I don't know why it is. Now, to be clear too, Australia does some absolutely ridiculous things when it comes to our road laws. So for example, we have ADRs, Australian Design Rules. And the ADRs mean that we can get, let's say, a super safe Mercedes S-Class from Europe, but if you want to sell it in Australia, we're going to need to crash one. You know, like we're going to have to go and do all of these other tests in Australia to make sure that they comply with Australian standards. It's like, it's from Germany. I'm pretty sure it's going to be good. So I don't know why we have to do that. This little country of 25 million people with just a huge amount of space, apparently we've got to crash it and just see what happens. So another couple of things that are sort of different nomenclature-wise. So we have boots. They have trunks in America, so the boot is the thing at the back, most of the cars at the back anyway, where you would open it and put your bags in. Apparently there's a trunk here. I did know this, but I think many other people think that's maybe a little bit different. Driving's quite interesting too. So I kind of touched on this last week, but it became more evident as I've been driving more. So I mentioned we got a Corvette. We picked up a Corvette because I just wanted like something really American. Like I wanted something nice and fun, and there are nice and fun things from Europe as well, but something American. I'd never driven a Corvette before. So we got a 2018 Corvette Stingray, had 80 miles on it when we picked it up. So I was like, man, this car smells new. And drove from Dallas out to where we are now, which is in a place called Tyler. So a couple of hours of freeway driving. Then yesterday did a bunch of driving just because we had a Corvette. And the interesting thing about the driving here is that people are really chilled out with the driving. Now, this is also a perspective of coming from Australia where, frankly, people drive like freaking lunatics, depending on where you are. And what I mean by lunatics is just infatuated with the speed limit. And this is an Australian government problem that we all suffer from. And what I mean by infatuated is you can get a ticket for 3 kilometres an hour over the speed limit. My six-year-old daughter can walk faster than 3 kilometres an hour. I mean, this is just an absolute freaking joke. And there are all sorts of other issues I don't want to get into about that. But Australia has this infatuation, which means that once you end up driving, everyone is sort of almost at the same pace, and one person's speedo reads a little bit higher than another, so they're going a little bit faster, and then they get to an overtaking lane. Not allowed to speed when you're overtaking. So you're stuck behind someone and you're doing 98, but you really want to be doing like 100, but you can't overtake because you only got like... And it just breeds this really shitty sort of road behaviour, where you get all these cars queued up to each other and then you get to an overtaking lane and other people speed up so you can't get past. It's just negative, negative, negative. So Australia's got some massive problems. I don't see it like that anywhere else in the world where I drive or where I've been a passenger in a car as well. There are places where the driving is a little bit crazy. I mean, holy shit, go to Beijing. It is absolutely nuts. More than 100,000 people a year die on the roads in China. So, you know, there's that. But it is very chilled out here. And yeah, I just can't think of an occasion where I've heard someone, for example, use their horn. If people want to merge, they let you in, which is really nice. It's just a pleasure to drive. Now, it's not kind of like Europe or particularly in Germany where there's discipline though. So what I mean by discipline is like, you'd be driving down the highway and there's three lanes and people would just be undertaking and going around and jotting in wherever they want to. Like it's just super, super casual. Which in a way is a little bit frustrating, but no one's getting upset about it, which is kind of nice. The thing, actually, one more thing on that, we actually saw one guy, a guy in an M4, who was obviously in a bit of a rush, and I had seen just before we saw this car, there was an unmarked cop car, and in the States you can spot them because they got the, and someone might correct me here, but I think this is always the case, they've got those spotlights on the driver's side, which you can sort of fold around and then point at people. And then it did have the flashy lights over the number plate and just hidden inside the windows. But if you look for these things, you can see them. Anyway, this bloke on the M4 comes flying past, cuts in front, you know, like really, really tight. And I was saying to my wife, oh, this will be interesting. You know, he's gone for sure. And I could just see, because we were behind the cop car, the guy in the window just did this. And then that was it. And then like the M4 got another break to undertake somewhere and he just shot off. And it's kind of like, yep. I don't know that I'd say you're driving dangerously, but you're certainly, you can see dangerous from where you are. But the cops are just like, okay, well, this, it's all right, that is very interesting. But on that front, the one thing here that does worry me, and we saw this come undone in pretty spectacular fashion a couple of times because of the rain, is the tailgating. People drive really, really close to the people in front in 70 or 80 mile an hour zones. They have 80 mile an hour zones in Texas, which is about 130 k an hour. So it's a nice clip to get along at on a nice freeway. And the gap between so many cars I saw was less than a second. And if you don't know what I mean by this, as you're driving along the freeway and you pass say a post, look at the car in front of you. When it passes the post, you start counting one, two, etc. You should really be about 3 seconds. And yeah, this is just simply down to the physics of reaction time for a driver. And of course, the fact that once you actually do see that the car in the front has suddenly stopped and you need to get on the brake pedal, there are fluids and things that have to move and then traction and everything that has to be maintained. Obviously, the more space you have, the safer it's going to be. So it really should be about 3 seconds. It's really frequently less than 1 second. And we saw at least two rear enders driving here the other night because it was raining as well. And a couple of them were pretty nasty with ambulances and stuff like that. So if you're a Texan driving here and leaving like less than 1 second of the car in front, give them a bit more room. Now, here's another interesting one. Motorbikes. People riding motorbikes without helmets. What are you thinking? Like, do you know how squishy your head becomes if you come off a motorbike? I suspect it may be one of these freedom things. It's like my head, I'm going to drive around on a motorbike and squish my head if I want to, my decision. Maybe that's the case, but it's really unusual. And I know this is a state-by-state thing as well, and I know it's not the same all over the US, but certainly, let's say, all across Europe, even Asia. And when I say even Asia, some parts of Asia are much more developing nations. Someone like the Philippines, for example, is a less developed country than somewhere like the US or the UK. But you have to wear helmets in all of these places. Although from memory, it's been a few years since I was there now, I think in the Philippines there were a lot of people with the helmet like literally just perched on top of their head. And what I mean by this is think about a full-faced motorbike helmet that actually has a proper construction covering the jaw and everything. They would just sit it on the top of their heads. I shouldn't laugh because there's probably a lot of people that died because of doing that. Anyway, so I find that really weird. But just to sort of do the other cultural thing the other way around, Australia goes too far the other way. And even since I was a little kid, it's been law that everyone on a push bike has to wear a helmet. If you're on a push bike, you have to wear a helmet, otherwise you can be fined. Now, I think for the most part, this is actually a very good idea and we should do this. But where it gets really weird is things like we've got bikes you can hire, like many parts of the world do now, in our city on the Gold Coast, and you can ride them up and down the beach on the footpath, and you have to wear a helmet. And there are actually a bunch of people saying, look, you're trying to increase the adoption of bikes and people riding to work and things like this. People generally don't want to put a helmet on before riding down a bike path on the way to work. So it goes a little bit too far in that regard as well, I think. No front license plate. A lot of people in Texas don't have a front license plate. And I was talking to someone who was a Texan the other day, and he said, I think apparently you're meant to, but basically nothing really happens if you don't. So a whole key heap of cars don't have them. I can get it from an aesthetic perspective. The one on the front of the vet is really ugly because the vet's got kind of a little bit of a pointed nose and it has to then stick out and be, it's just ugly. But I found that an interesting observation. Most other places I can think of, you have to. And again, it might be a state-by-state thing. I believe there are other states in the US where you don't have to have one or where the social norm is not to have one, but yeah. Last thing on the car side of things. paying for petrol before you pump it. And I've definitely had this in other states as well. And it's a pain in the ass for me as an Aussie as well, because you go up to the pump and it's like, insert your credit card, here you go. Enter your zip code. Now, first of all, what the hell is a zip code? Well, it's a postcode, except we don't have zip codes and they're totally different to ours. And every time I try and put in my zip code, it goes, no, this isn't right, because it's like, why on earth would you have a 4-digit zip code? So then you have to go into the store and pay the money before you pump the gas. And I think it is like this in other parts of the world. I think Canada's the same as well, from memory. It's been a while since I've been there. But, you know, a lot of US norms are the same in Canada as well. So, yeah, in Australia, you would pump your gas, petrol, and then you would pay for it, and you would pay for the amount that you pumped. I don't know if they do this here. I assume they do it so that there's less sort of, you know, pump and run sort of deals where people just disappear. That does happen in Australia sometimes. The cops generally tend to chase those people down. I've known people who've accidentally left without paying because they got their mind on other things, and the cops do find them. Money. Pennies. Why do you still have pennies? Who does anything with a penny? So we got rid of our 1 and 2 cent coins in Australia. Must be like 20 years ago now. Like, it's in a blue moon, you'd never see one in a financial traction these days, a financial transaction. You might see someone's coin jar somewhere has one in them, because that's a pointless amount of money these days. So it's kind of funny to still have pennies. And I guess the thing that makes it a little bit easier in the US is that everyone wants tips. So it's just like, have some pennies. But actually, that does bring me to the next thing, which is tipping, which is probably the thing that I suspect most people from other countries find really, really weird in the US, and a little bit uncomfortable at many times. So for folks in the US that may not be familiar with this, the culture to tipping here is just fundamentally different to the rest of the world. So I'll give you an example. In Australia, I would tip once in a blue moon, and what I mean by that is you'd never usually tip at a coffee shop or even at a restaurant, unless you had like really epic service. Like, if I went to a restaurant and the waiter was just absolutely out of this world awesome, and we had great chats and they were really useful and they provided a lot of extra value beyond what I was expecting, then maybe I'd tip them like $10 if it was $100 or even $200 for a meal. So, you know, it might be sort of 5 or 10% at most. And no one would expect that either. And inevitably the waiter would be like, dude, thanks, I really appreciate that. But here, it's obviously a really ingrained part of the culture. And even when you go to a coffee shop, if this is for the folks now outside the US, and you pay for your coffee, so I've been paying with credit card most of the time these days, you pay and then there's a terminal and it's like, what tip would you like to leave? And there's buttons, 10%, 15%, 20%. Sometimes the gratuity is already built into the cost as well. And in fact, you see it as a line item when your receipt comes. So, well, what if I didn't want to tip? Well, you're not meant to do this. I always think back to Reservoir Dogs. If you've never seen the movie Reservoir Dogs, go and see it because it's just epic Tarantino. But in one of the opening scenes, they're all in the restaurant and Mr. Pink Steve Buscemi doesn't want to tip. And everyone's like, look, these people are on minimum wage, and minimum wage in the US is not enough to support basically to live on. So they rely on tips. But then you get this really weird thing where it's like, well, if you're a waiter, you get a tip, but if you're a cook, then you're not going to get a tip because then you're in the back of the house instead of the front. I don't think that's something which is going to change in the foreseeable future in the US, but we just find it really weird. And the thing that constantly pops up is you're sort of going, is this waiter or doorman or whoever being really nice to me because there's a direct monetary outcome for them? You know, are they hedging for a big tip? Look, in fairness, particularly on this Texas trip, I haven't felt that, but there's been plenty of occasions where I just kind of feel like this is a facade of niceness. So, look, I mean, maybe the person's just having a crap day and they're just doing their best to be nice, but it's just always a weird thing. As part of that as well, on the niceness side of things, the courtesy here is quite different, especially to Australia. And we are super, super casual in Australia, but there's so many sirs. You know, it's like, okay, sir, what can I get you? Here's your food, sir. Welcome, sir. So in Australia, to be like, come on in, mate. Like, here's your bill, mate. Like, do you have a good meal? Like, in general, not sort of a offensive or intended to be, you know, we don't give a shit or anything like that in Australia. It's just a very casual, welcoming, friendly thing. Now, again, in fairness, particularly on this Texas trip, people have been super, super friendly, and the sir hasn't sort of felt too weird. But very often, it's just like, wow, this is a very formal way to start our coffee relationship. Money, bills. The bills all look the same, which which is quite interesting. In the UK is a good example. Some of the bills are freaking massive. Some of the others are smaller. Like they're visibly quite different. In Australia, they're all different colours. So if you look at a $20 note, it's red, and if it's a $50 note, well then it's yellow. And ours are also plastic and different sizes as well. But they're very, very easy to discern. Here it's like I have a handful of green bills. It's very hard to figure out what they are unless I actually go through and count them. Cultural things. So one of the interesting things that someone said to me when I started coming to the US a lot a few years ago is they said that the US is much more like a whole heap of little countries as opposed to different states. So it's really interesting how culturally different things are between states in the US, particularly as compared to Australia. It's a little bit hard to compare it to somewhere like Europe because they actually are different countries that have different cultures and different languages. But in Australia, you can sort of go from the very south and it's like, okay, it's colder and there's more distilleries, to the very north and it's warmer and there's more crocodiles. And other than that, everyone sounds the same and pretty much has the same sort of cultural leanings. And the differences are really quite subtle. Here it's much more so. I mean, obviously somewhere like Texas, the culture around farms and cattle and guns and all the rest of it, as well as the accent, of course, is very, very different to if you're in San Fran. And of course, San Fran is a big tech city and they do different industries there to what typically happens in Texas. But then, of course, you go somewhere like Hawaii and, okay, it's a free state and it's in the middle of the ocean as well, but very, very different in many other ways, whereas we've got, you know, tropical islands and things you'd go to in Australia and it's, you still talk the same and do the same stuff. So that's actually really interesting. And I almost, without getting political, I almost wonder if that sort of leads to the political divide everyone has at the moment, where they're just parts of the country that are just so different to other parts of the country. People just have fundamentally different ideals. Military personnel, this is an interesting one. And I'm going to sort of talk about my perception of the good and the bad with this. I always find it interesting when you come to the US, the way military personnel are favored in ways that they wouldn't be in other parts of the world. So a good example of this is that you go to get on a plane and they're like, all right, so we're going to let the military folks get on first. And you're sort of going, on the one hand, the respect for the service that they give the country and the sacrifices that many of them make is very admirable. On the other hand, you're taking like the fittest, healthiest people and giving them the priority to get on the plane, which seems kind of weird. Where I think it's really interesting, where it's very positive, we went to a football game on Sunday. Went and saw the Dallas Cowboys at the stadium in Texas, which was an absolutely outstanding experience, by the way. This was a really, really epically cool place. And it was an experience that would be very memorable because so much of it is over the top. People even said, apparently, this is over the top for America. So, because it's just like this massive, crazy stadium. But, you know, at the start, they have military personnel and they come out with the flag and there's a national anthem and all this sort of stuff. And it was, what's the right word for it? It did sort of make you all feel very much like supporting the US. I'm not sort of saying it right. Of patriotism. There was a really good sort of feeling of patriotism in a very positive way, much more so than what we have in Australia and much more so than what I've seen in other parts of the world. So, you know, that part of it was actually very nice. But it is very different to Oz. Also, seeing a lot of discounts for military personnel. Cloud Pets had discounts. How is that? You know, Cloud Pets, like little teddy bears with the listening devices, and they got breached and all the data went everywhere. They gave military personnel discounts. And the reason I'm laughing at that is because they were ultimately listening devices and the recordings got leaked. So it's like, hey, military people, here's a cheap listening device for you to put in your house. Anyway, Halloween. Because we're approaching Halloween now. There are freaking pumpkins everywhere. Americans love Halloween. They go nuts about it. And I've been here before approaching Halloween too, and it is just like pumpkins galore. And we've been, yeah, particularly go to some places where, either to shops or where they're using them for decorations. And I just go, wow, this is a lot of pumpkins. So they really get into that. Thanksgiving. So we don't have Thanksgiving in other parts of the world. And the only reason I'm hesitating is I know Canada have the Thanksgiving. I think they do a bit earlier. But Europe certainly doesn't. Australia definitely doesn't. There is no Thanksgiving. We just basically start pimping Christmas early. And then that's it. So Thanksgiving is a very American thing. Coffee and soft drinks. You might have seen, if you're watching the video, I have just been drinking coffee under duress. And the duress is that I can't just get like a latte or some sort of espresso-based drink. America has a funny approach to coffee, which seems to, it almost seems a little bit symbolic of other parts of the country, which is like volume over quality. You know, like there are copious amounts of coffee. The folks here drink huge amounts of it, but it's consistently that drip stuff. And that's very, very different to other parts of the world. I can't think of another part of the world where it's just consistently drip coffee. Now, many people think of coffee as being a very European thing or a very Italian thing. I've not been to Italy yet. In fact, this is definitely on my list. I've got to get to Italy. People would think it's a very Italian thing. Consistently, though, and it's not just my biased opinion, but I hear from people the best coffee in the world is in Australia. Australia has a massive coffee culture, and that the culture is very much inverted to what I perceive here, which is around quality of coffee. And this is one thing that does actually differ a little bit in different parts of Australia. So, for example, Melbourne, which is down south, absolutely prides themselves on coffee. Not just coffee, but coffee shops. And you can go to almost any every other street corner in Melbourne, and there is a coffee shop which is not a chain. It's like a mum and dad running this shop for years and years and just lovingly crafting lattes and things like that. And some of you probably see me tweeting a lot of photos of coffee from Australia because it is such a cultural thing. And you just get these beautifully poured lattes that you can just consistently, reliably get really good stuff. We really rarely go to any coffee chain. Starbucks really struggled when they came to Australia. They had to shut a heap of stores, and I think there's only a few left now. But they definitely got the Australian market wrong. But it's something that you can just consistently get beautiful quality from. And it's quite inverted here. In fact, I remember I was in Utah a few years ago. Salt Lake is actually another place we've been going to a lot. And we were up on a mountain snowboarding. And it was like a nice resort spot, and we're having breakfast in this nice restaurant. And I'm like, I'll have a latte, please. I'm like, sorry, we got drip. I did some training once in a location, and they said, we're going to bring box coffee in. And I was like, this will be interesting. I've never had box coffee. Maybe box is like a roaster or something. It was coffee in a box. Well, it was inside a bag, inside a box, and then they microwaved it. And it tasted pretty much what you're probably thinking it would taste. It was, oh my God, it was just terrible. Volume. The soft drink thing is, soft drinks are everywhere here. Like, it is a massive, massive thing. Soft drinks, soda, whatever you want to call it. And don't get me wrong, we have soft drinks in Australia, but we're sort of conscious that there's a lot of sugar in them, and that they're not very good for you. And it becomes something that's a bit of a, certainly for myself and my family, a bit of a rarity. And I think we're consistent with many families. But here it's just such a norm. But then on the other side, the thing that I do really like about here is there's always like loads of ice water. We just had breakfast out here. And one of the first things they do is like, here's a great big cup and a great big whack of ice water. And I drink a heap of water, and I love it with ice. And I know that sounds like a benign, inane little thing. But I just always know I'm going to sit down and have a nice glass of water. Guns. Oh, boy. Where do you start here? America obviously has a massive gun culture, and I suspect that Texas is probably at the forefront of that. Guns. And I don't want to turn this into a political thing, because obviously guns have featured very heavily there. But I guess looking at social norms, guns are really, really exceptional in every other part of the world that I can think of, other than Canada. And again, they have that sort of, very similar social norms thing. So, if we think about Australia, and Australia in many ways is very similar to the US in that it is a great big place. We've got lots of farms. There are lots of people that go hunting and things like this. But it is really exceptional to know anyone who has a gun. Certainly outside of rural areas. And a lot of that as well goes back to an incident that we had, I think in about 97, where we had a mass murder from a bloke who got his hands on guns. And I think there were 30-something people that died in Tasmania. And there had been other incidents before that as well. And Australia basically just went, well, that's it, no more guns. Like they had a massive gun buyback scheme, so they paid people for their guns. Just a huge number got handed in. I think they recently had another round where they're like, maybe you didn't hand it in, here's where you can hand it in. We just won't ask any questions, just, you know, hand it in. So it's really exceptionally normal to see guns in Australia now. And the only sort of exceptions to that would be farmers. So farmers who sometimes need to shoot cattle or birds or vermin or things like that. Excuse me. And of course, hunters and sport shooters who... It really is exceptional in Australia to see anyone who goes out hunting. And what I mean by exceptional is particularly when we're, you know, sort of centred around metropolitan areas, it'd be very unusual for anyone there. And there are not many people outside of most of those metropolitan areas. There's obviously a culture here sort of ingrained in freedoms, etc. as well, about having guns, which makes it very, very prevalent. There's lots of talk about rights under amendments and things every time there is an incident in terms of mass shootings here. I highly doubt it's ever going to change because it is so political and it is so ingrained in what people view as their, I guess, human rights and freedoms. But it's a very unusual thing to think that someone might actually keep a gun in their home for protection anywhere else in the world that I can think of. Yeah, consequently, in places like Australia, we actually haven't had any mass murders since they took the guns away. Anyway, I'm not going to go further down that rabbit hole because it's an enormously emotive issue for people on all sides. Dogs on planes and in restaurants. I actually like this. Now, and I think Australia's a bit backwards here. And to be clear, Australians, we love our pets. Certainly my wife and I both had dogs as kids. It would be a bit hard with my travel schedule these days. But, you know, we had pets. We love our pets. But you really rarely see them, say, at a restaurant, certainly an indoor restaurant or a shopping centre or anything like that. Parts of Europe are really, really into their dogs. Dutch love their dogs. I always remember as a kid living there, it was like, wow, man, there's a lot of dogs here. And people take them to the restaurants and sometimes into the shops and things. It's interesting to hear to see how many support dogs there are. So you're supporting people with either those who need physical help, or there's a lot of emotional support dogs, as I understand it. I saw a lady the other day who had a dog which had a jacket on it, and they had the sort of, you know, descriptions on it, I'm a support dog, and it said support dog for PTSD. And so, all right, well, I can absolutely see how that would work. I think that would be really super cool to have a dog to help you get over challenges like PTSD. So I see a lot more of that here. I see them on planes all the time as well. So regularly see people have dogs on planes that are support dogs. If you're thinking about the squirrel thing, let me touch on that. So about the time I came over here, apparently a lady got thrown off a plane because she had like a support squirrel with her. And they're like, no, ma'am, you can't have a support squirrel. You can have a support dog, maybe a support cat, I don't know. But squirrel, I'm not sure what the criteria is. Is it because it's, I think a squirrel's meant to be a rodent, right? So I don't know, but I really like seeing the dogs all around the place. I think that's good. Pedestrian lights. This is cool. There's another thing these guys do really well over here. So our pedestrian lights, green to cross, red to stop, that's it. And then there's like nothing in between. So it's like, it's green, we're going, now it's red, we've got to stop. I like the way here they count down. So in Dallas, it would be like, okay, it's green, except it's not green, it's white. I'm not sure why they have white instead of green, because then they do have, oh, is it red or is it orange? I think it's orange. Anyway, you can figure out the colors easily enough. But after the green, white goes, it's like, now we're going to count down. And I think it was counting down from about 20 seconds, which is kind of good because you know how long you got left. Incidentally, I remember in Taiwan on the road that they would do that for drivers as well. So the drivers could see how long they had left. I really like that. And that is pretty much it from my list of pre-prepared things. So, and I'm just going to check that again because that actually went on for quite a bit longer than what I expected. And I'm glad I did this at the end. So if you've stuck around until this point to hear it, well, thank you very much. If you have observations of the same kind or questions about them, then leave them in the comments as well. Look, like I said, some of the stuff is like anywhere. There's always things that you like more than home or other places, and there are always things that you like less. And I think this is just sort of part of the richness of life, being able to travel around and see these things. So I hope you enjoyed that, and then please chime in on the comments if you'd like to ask questions or leave your own observations. And lastly, sponsorship-wise, it's NetSparker again this week. So thank you very much to NetSparker. I still love what those guys do. I was actually pulling some blog posts during some of my talks earlier on in the week and showing some of the things I've been doing with NetSparker over time. And I realized that the relationship there went back to about 2011. And to be clear, relationship then was we went and bought this stuff and then we used it in Pfizer for dynamic analysis. So it's another one of those cases where I'm really glad that this is an organization that's supporting me after me having sort of found them of my own free volition and just deciding that they do a good thing. So big thanks to NetSparker for that. I will come to you guys next week from home again, back on the Gold Coast. I've checked the weather. It's going to be sunny, which is really nice. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to there. And I hope this sort of extended American-centric edition has been interesting. Thank you very much for watching.